last presenter at the last session of the conference, and that's a distinction that I never had before, so I wanted to mention that. But kidding aside, I first want to recognize my collaborators on this project, Liang Hong, Michael McConniff, Monty Matthew, and Barry Denneman of the UMKC School of Dentistry. We do not have any relationship to disclose, and to start out, I'll give you some background about the project. And this project that I'm going to present here stems from an earlier initiative that the state of Missouri sponsored for us at the UMKC Schools of Dentistry and Business and Public Administration to develop a population-based workforce planning model for projecting both the need of dental services within a defined region and also the oral health workforce required to address that need. Some of you may remember we have presented this work, the model aspect of this work earlier in an APHA conference, I think it was in 2006. So I will briefly talk about the model and then focus mainly on the mapping aspect that came out of that model. To talk briefly about the model, the key consideration in developing the model or the charts that we had from the state was to develop a model that's population-based and also based on available data sources that is capable of estimating dental workforce required to deliver dental services for the entire population of any defined geographical area, addresses additional dental needs based on dental and medical mobility, and also takes account the current practice patterns and production. So that was the basis of developing that model. And what we did with that model was to apply that model on the entire state of Missouri, and that's what I'm going to present mainly here. The model essentially entailed two major components. One component was to determine the dental care needs in terms of the number of dental visits annually, and the other aspect was the determination of dental workforce needed, again, based on current productivity and practice patterns to address those healthcare needs. And the model building process started with the assumption or the notion that everybody needs at least one preventive dental visit annually and then additional visits based on different dental and medical morbidity and also area characteristics and population characteristics. And we took those initial assumptions and ran it through a Delphi process of 31 stakeholders from dental community, dental practice community, state policymakers, and also consulted literature to come up with modified assumptions. And after two rounds of Delphi process, the modified assumptions were that everybody needs minimum two preventive visits per year based on what our Delphi panel agreed upon. If anybody had periodontal loss of attachment of greater than 5 millimeter, that person would require two additional visits. People with coronal caries, root caries, diabetes, pregnancy would require one additional visit each for those conditions. And then if we're talking about a geographical area that does not have fluoridated water supply, then we would adjust for that. And also if there's heavy concentration of poverty, we would adjust for that. So those were the modified assumptions. And those were, again, after we applied those to the available morbidity data, and we used the enhanced data for that, we created dental visit indices for each age and sex cohort. And I apologize for the small print on the slide, but if you focus on the highlighted row here, the yellow row here, we're talking about the male of 20 to 29 years of age cohort. And the enhanced data showed that 2.5% of that population has greater than 5 millimeters of periodontal loss of attachment, 9.22% has root caries, and so forth. So we took the baseline, two visits per year, and adjusted for each of those conditions. For example, for the loss of attachment, we adjusted, increased the index by 5%. And after taking account of all those adjustments, it came out, actually I'm missing the very last column is on the black part of the screen. So it came out to be 2.51 visits per year for that age and sex cohort. And as you can tell, we developed indices for each of the age and sex cohort. And that was the basis for applying those visit rates to the population of any specific geographic area. And we obtained the population data from Census Bureau, applied those to that data to come up with the total number of dental visits required for that specific population. And then there were additional adjustments for, if you recall, the modified assumptions for diabetes, for pregnancy, and those kinds of conditions that may require additional visits. And that gave us a total number of dental visits required annually for a specific geographical area. And for this presentation, we applied that to the county level. So we aggregated that data on the county level. On the productivity part, again, based on data from ADA's annual survey of dentists and also data from the licensure renewal surveys, we looked at what are the compositions of typical teams. If you assume each team is headed by one dentist in different specialty areas, and how many visits do they serve annually on an average, and that gave us the number of dental visits produced by each dental team in each specialty area. And also from that data, we had the proportions of dental visits, aggregate the number of dental visits served by each specialty area. So we applied that population need aggregate number to the distribution of dental teams, and that gave us the number of dental professionals needed in each of the specialty areas. This is an example of one of the counties that we looked at, and the top table actually is what I described in the earlier slide, where different teams composed of dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants would, on an average, address these number of visits. And as you can see, in different specialties, you have different combinations. In general practice, you have typically one dental hygienist and two dental assistants with one dentist. In orthodontics, you don't have dental hygienists, you have four dental assistants. So that's what is common in Missouri, as far as we could tell from the data that we got from the licensure survey. And then we applied that to, in this example, a specific county, the Jackson County, and came up with the number of visits, the distribution of the total number of visits that we derived from the enhanced data that would go to each of the specialties. And then applying the top table to these numbers, we derived the number of dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants required in each of the specialty area, as well as the total number of dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants required in that particular county. Having done that, again, what we did was we took the model projected numbers and compared that with the existing numbers in each of the counties. And again, the existing numbers came from the license renewal survey. So one of the limitations of our study is we're looking mainly at the residents' addresses, and this does not account for individuals having multiple practices or practices in different locations, different county lines, and so forth. When we looked at general practice dentists, the distribution essentially showed that the three urban counties, and if you are not familiar with the lay of the land of Missouri, this is on the western border, this is the Kansas City metro area. On the eastern border, this is the St. Louis metro area. I-70 runs through here, and on both sides, east, north and south of I-70, most of the areas are rural areas, except what you have here and some of the areas here. So we also applied that number, that model, to 66%. We mapped 66% of the model projected need, based on the assumption that not everybody goes to a dentist. So, sort of taking an arbitrary number, that what if only two thirds of the population went to the dentist? What happens? And again, the numbers obviously would change, but you have still in the majority of the rural areas you have shortages. When we looked at specialist dentists, and running out of time, so I'll rush through some of these slides. The red areas are areas with 90 to 100% shortage. So majority of the specialist dentists are located in the metro areas. When we looked at 66% of the projected need, the pictures don't change much. So again, that again tells us that they are all located in large metro areas. And this is a combination of both general and specialist dentists together. I want to flip over to the dental hygiene slide. And you see the same situation here. So what exactly did we learn from this exercise? Obviously, the first one is not anything atypical, that majority of the dentists and dental hygienists, dental workforce, are located in the large urban areas. And the distribution of both dental hygienists and dentists are sparse in the rural areas. So we cannot essentially recruit more dentists and dental hygienists in these areas unless we talk about other kinds of providers increasing, changing practice laws to allow non-dental providers to do some of the preventive services and so forth. But obviously, the data was our limitation, and we are looking at this more of an advocacy tool than a predictive or a determinant tool that somebody would take to make policy decisions. It's more of an advocacy tool for making policy changes along the lines of practice law changes and so forth. And I borrow a line from one of the presentations last night at the DHAT presentation and the model that was presented there. And the paraphrasing here, but essentially we are also more interested in the discussion that this model or these maps would generate than the models or the maps themselves. And that's what I had to present in front of you. Thank you.
I want to thank all of the speakers, and I'm going to open this up to questions. And I'd actually like to ask the first one of Barbara. You had mentioned the fact that you had educated medical professionals and dental professionals together. It's really a two-part question. Did you involve community health center medical and dental providers similarly to private practice medical and dental providers? And 6 months post when you did
Is this on?
No.
I'll just take that. Okay.
Oh, God. All right. That was a long question. The trainings were open to practitioners from any practice setting. So, yes, community health people were attending training at the same with private practice. The questions asked 6 months later had to do with how referrals were made relative to pregnant patients, coordinating with providers. We didn't sort of pull out whether the provider was a private practice doc or a community health center doc. We were just looking at referral patterns and whether people were talking more and coordinating more, and the answer was yes. Sometimes I was using dentist deliberately because we were only looking, we pulled out the general dentist from the dental professional category, but the analysis was done for all dental professionals, regardless of whether it was a dental assistant, registered dental hygienist, or dentist, be it a specialist or generalist. That's a valid recommendation, Bev. But when we did ask, are you seeing more 0 to 5 in your practice, we were asking the dentist because they're the ones that set policy for that practice.
Scott, I think you had a question, and then Howard next.
I had a question about the Massachusetts survey of dental hygienists. It's actually a fascinating approach to the survey professionals of any type. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the process of
the time frame was probably a good 15 months prior to the implementation of the survey, where the Board of Registration and Dentistry was first contacted. And we went through a change of executive directors of the board as well. But there was back and forth input, sometimes trying to provide an explanation as to why the certain information we were asking was important. And we've just completed the analysis of the dentist survey that we did in January to March of 08 of the dentists, and now preparing a much shorter survey to go out to the dental hygienists, more focused on public health issues. This particular survey, as Donna mentioned, also talked about the benefits that they might be receiving and really focused more on private practice dental hygienists, and now we're focusing additional questions on more of the role of the dental hygienist in public health settings in this shorter survey.
Does that have to go through with
it does not. No, it does not. Howard?
I
Donna, and then Oscar. Oscar? I think we have time for just two questions. And I think you had a question, Ellie. I'll bring you the mic if you don't mind asking.
On the back of the evaluation form, I was very intrigued by this list of objectives for the session. And I was wondering about, especially flow to 15 and question 15 at the bottom, assessing the effectiveness.
it could have been potentially ours, but I think maybe it was the Massachusetts one. But I think that her question was more directed towards APHA and the oral health section as to how the section itself was going to work to implement that, and that's why I was looking to you in terms of that policy that we have.